Media Director for the Coalition to Stop Gun Violence, Andrew Patrick, is our guest. The Coalition to Stop Gun Violence seeks to secure freedom from gun violence through research, strategic engagement, and effective policy advocacy. Andrew directs the organization's social media strategy, media strategy, press relations, and website development. They have media strategy twice in his bio there. Hey, Andrew, good afternoon and welcome. Andrew Patrick, Media Director for the Coalition to Stop Gun Violence. How are you?
Hi, Leslie. Thank you so much for having me on.
You know, Andrew, every time we have a shooting, one of the first things is, what's the guy's name? Because, you know, if it's Muhammad, they say it's terrorism. And, you know, if it's a Muslim name, an Arab name, is it terrorism? And then it comes down to which political party or candidate did this person support? But there's something big that everybody is overlooking, is the access to the weapon that is used. And not that everybody's overlooking it. You people aren't. I'm not. A lot of our listeners are not. But this is something that politicians, especially on the right within the Republican Party, don't want to talk about. So let's talk about the shooting. You guys at the Coalition to Stop Gun Violence had a great headline in one of your press releases. Today's shootings prove gun violence does not discriminate. I think we also know that, you know, gun violence does not discriminate. You know, you can be a liberal, you can be a conservative. The victim can be a liberal, can be a conservative. The gun violence is not political, but the gun used is indisputable. And the access to that weaponry. So let's talk about this, because this perpetrator allegedly had run-ins with the law in the past, a history, I think, of domestic violence and issues with owning a weapon. Shouldn't have had a weapon, clearly, right?
I mean, you're absolutely right, Leslie. The greatest indicator of future violence is past violence. So when you look back and you see this gentleman who I believe was charged with aggravated battery of his wife, the charges were eventually dropped. So there's since they were dropped and there was no gun removal in that case. But, I mean, far too often we see this connection between violent behavior and these horrible shootings. This gentleman, clearly there's a lot of issues here, but he had the ability to gain access to a high-powered weapon. It looks like he wasn't very equipped in operating it, because apparently it was just a madhouse on that baseball field. But it is a problem that we see in incident after incident. These violent behavior creates these mass killers, and that's something that we're trying to stop at the Coalition.
I want to talk about this, because it wasn't just one shooting, it was two, and that's just in the course of one day in our country. Five people, including the House Majority Whip Steve Scalise, were shot and injured at the baseball field in Alexandria, Virginia, just out of our nation's capital. And then hours later, police in San Francisco responded to reports of an active shooting at a UPS facility. And several fatalities were reported there. We still have details even coming out today. These are horrific shootings. And, you know, people get tired of reading about thoughts and prayers, even about condolences to the families of those who were killed, or to people who we hope and pray and wish a speedy recovery for those that are injured. You know, we always talk about how brave the men and women and our first responders teams are, and how great they are at, you know, sometimes gunning down a perpetrator, and certainly those first responders there for the victims. We saw the brave men and women at the Capitol, the Capitol Police in Alexandria. We also saw that in San Francisco among their police force. But gun violence, is it fair to say, is not confined to one demographic? It's not confined to one set of Americans. In other words, you don't have to be a right-wing wacko to own a gun and use it, as this has been shown. You don't need to have a political beef. There are people out there killing out of rage, out of revenge, out of anger, out of mental illness, out of things go wrong in a robbery and they need money because they need to, you know, feed their drug habit. There are those who are politically making a statement. There are those that have terrorist ties or activities. There are those that just plain kill people based on hatred or racism. People who kill, simply because others defended individuals that they were preying on, or people who kill based on the color of one's skin or someone's religion or the clothing they wear. This just goes across the board. So gun violence is not confined to one demographic.
You nailed it, Leslie. This week is actually what the gun violence prevention movement has labeled Disarm Hate Week, because we have two anniversaries. On Monday was the one-year anniversary of the Pulse shooting in Orlando, and upcoming on Saturday is the two-year anniversary of the Charleston Mother Emanuel massacre. And these are people who had hatred for these demographics, African-American in Charleston and LGBTQ Hispanic, mostly, in Orlando. But the people who had hate were able to get a gun and destroy lives. The gun makes this hate fatal. It is the ability to grab it and use it and kill a lot of people and in a short period of time. Yesterday's shooting is not unusual in this country. We have 92 people killed by guns every day. We have 36,000 killed every year. What made it newsworthy yesterday was who the victims were. They were members of Congress. They were Republican members of Congress. So this is a rare instance where the people who can affect change and make it harder for dangerous individuals to get a gun were affected by gun violence. And we hope they take this opportunity and really think about how serious this issue is and how Americans are dying every single day.
Speaking of dying every single day, more than 90 individuals die from gun violence alone in the United States every day. That number is correct, right? I'm not being, exaggerating or sensationalistic with numbers. Over 90 a day from gun violence.
That's correct. And that is dying. That doesn't count the people whose lives are affected from being shot and surviving either with injuries or a post-traumatic stress. That is more than 90 people just dying from gun violence.
You mentioned the Pulse nightclub shooting in Orlando. Monday, we remembered those victims. A couple of days, we're going to remember the 9 victims that were killed in their church in Charleston as the result of a hate crime, racially motivated. These are big incidents, just like what happened in Alexandria, Virginia. You have a congressional member, you have politicians. But when you have over 90 a day, like you said, that die, and we just look at how many, mass shootings there are so many other shootings that aren't mass. In other words, not all of the shootings, not all of the injuries, not even all of the deaths are reaching, the front page of the paper or the headline. I mean, they may be buried somewhere tiny in print or not even mentioned at all or buried on page 12. And I say that because I want to ask you two things. One, is it... if it bleeds, it leads, but you got to bleed a lot or be important for people to hear about it, it would seem, right? It has to be like a massacre, as they call it, or, the victim has to be a celebrity or a politician for Americans to even hear about some of these incidences of gun violence, which, are occurring every single day.
5 shots with no deaths on a baseball field would not be newsworthy in most places in America. It would not even would not make anywhere close to the front page. And that's just the society. I mean, society and Americans have accepted this as the norm, and we're here to say, no, there are ways to prevent these from happening. There are ways to keep dangerous people from gaining access to these weapons. We just need the people who make the laws, and in many states, to be fair, there are laws that are passing that are making stronger gun laws. That has not made its way to Washington, D.C. yet, but I wouldn't set this Congress as the benchmark because we know how hard it is to pass even legislation that they can agree on, much less an issue where that has been divisive in the past and is probably going to continue to be divisive for a period of time.
When we talk about gun violence, I think there are some people that feel, and we talked about it not discriminating, but I mean, there are white people that pull the trigger and are victims. There are African Americans that pull the trigger and are victims. Latinos. There are Muslims who pull the trigger and Muslims who are victims. There are gay people who pull the trigger. Gay people are victims. Straight, Republican, Democrat. Does it surprise you that within minutes of these types of shootings, they need to label the shooter? You know, either they are a, you know, ISIS provoked or Islamic, you know, fundamental Islamic, radical Islamic terrorist, you know, or they're a what are they calling them now? They're saying that there are more and more violent, you know, antics from the loony left, as this guy was being referred to yesterday. I mean, the fact that Senator Sanders had to come out and condemn the actions of somebody who just happened to support him politically, but blows my mind. I think it was the right thing for him to do. But I mean, you know, Senator Sanders, no politician is responsible, for left or right, for the actions of an individual who's filled with hate, has lost their mind, a bit of both, and has a gun in their hand.
It is an issue that is going to have to be confronted. This was an attack on members of Congress. If this gentleman had been anything but white, it would have been labeled an act of terrorism immediately in the news media. That wasn't the case. But we do put people into boxes when these things happen, and we try to justify it based on what they've said or posted on their social media accounts. The common denominator is the gun. It is the availability of a gun that made a tragedy occur.
You know, I want to know, there are people out there who cite stats, and right-wingers who are very pro-gun want to do this all the time. And I want to be clear, no one, including you guys, is trying to take away a Second Amendment. We're just trying to take away limit the type of weaponry that can do mass destruction to whom that weaponry is available. Am I correct in that?
That's correct. I mean, we've heard for years from the gun lobby and the pro-gun movement that it's a gun doesn't kill people. People kill people. That's why we need to identify dangerous people and make sure they don't have access to a gun.
And when we talk about that, it's interesting. Every time there's a shooting, more and more people go out and buy guns. Why do you think that is? Is that just fear and the idea that the better armed we are, the safer we are? Because the stats don't bear that to be true.
If more guns made you safe, America would be the safest country in the world. And that is not the case. I don't know. It'll be interesting to see under this new administration if there is a rush to the gun stores, as there was under the Obama administration. The trend that we've kind of watched has been that President Trump has been bad for gun sales because there isn't the fear that there's going to be legislation that will enact stronger gun laws. So I'm curious to watch to see if there is a rise in gun sales after this incident. Unfortunately, it will not be the last high-profile shooting. There are more shootings happening every day. There's more people dying from guns every day. And as we've talked about, they don't make their way into the headlines. But these are lives. These are American lives that are destroyed every single day because of the lax gun laws that we have.
We're going to take a break. When we come back, we're going to talk more with our guests. We're also going to share some of the tweets that were quite interesting and very informational from the Coalition to Stop Gun Violence. Andrew Patrick is their media director. He's with us. We hope you will join us. 888-6-LESLIE, 888-653-7543. Are guns part of the problem? Is that common sense? 888-6-LESLIE, 888-653-7543. Check out the website, csgv.org. Follow Andrew on Twitter at Andrew_Patrick. Follow the CSGV at CSGV. Back after this. We're back. Andrew Patrick, media director of the Coalition to Stop Gun Violence, is our guest. Andrew, thank you for holding. Welcome back. In light of the shooting in Virginia, I want to read the CSGV's tweets because I want to speak to this. And this goes back to, you know, if there's a violent background, there's probably going to be a violent future. The Alexandra shooter had been arrested been charged with assault of his girlfriend in 2006, and he also had a valid Illinois firearm license. In April 2006, he was arrested on a firearms battery charge after he allegedly punched his girlfriend in the face, then pulled a 12-gauge shotgun on a witness who attempted to intervene, then struck the witness on the left side of the head with the wooden stock of the shotgun. And there was another incident that involved his foster children, a child, where he choked the child and pulled her hair. Andrew, so that people understand, you can do these things and purchase a firearm, correct? There's nothing that stops you. I mean, yes, if you have served time in prison, if you're a convicted felon, you can't get a gun. Or maybe I'm wrong. Certainly, you can get a gun illegally. But this guy got a gun, at least one that we know of, legally.
Many states don't have restrictions on violent misdemeanors. So when there's these domestic battery, domestic violence charges that are misdemeanors, there is not a restriction. It varies state to state. I don't think we know exactly where he purchased this gun, whether it was in Virginia or whether he transported it from Illinois or where exactly he got it. But it is a lot of abusers remained armed because of these weak laws in many, many states.
We're going to take another break. That's our short segment. And when we come back, we're going to talk about mass shootings, different definitions of those, and what number the GOP baseball shooting was in our America. I'm Leslie Marshall. Back after this. Pick up the phone and join us, 888-6-LESLIE, 888-653-7543. The Coalition to Stop Gun Violence, csgv.org. Follow them on Twitter at csgv and Andrew's handle at Andrew_Patrick. We'll be back with him and you right after this. We are back. Welcome back. We are talking with Andrew Patrick, Media Director for the Coalition to Stop Gun Violence. Andrew, thank you for holding. Welcome back. Let's take some calls. If you have questions or comments regarding the shootings, regarding gun violence, the shootings in San Francisco and in Virginia, and all the shootings this year, we're going to talk about that. Mass shootings, guns, and how much guns factor into the equation. Pick up the phone and join us. 888-6-LESLIE, 888-653-7543. Let's go to line two in Decatur, Georgia, with Reggie. Reggie, question or comment for our guest, Andrew.
Well, I have a question. You know, why is it that whenever you have massive shootings such as this, the conservatives always quick to blame us on the left for this, when in actuality it's their, shall we say, rhetoric that causes all of this? Whether they get it from talk radio or television or anywhere else or social media, they always blame us when in fact it's them that are, well, perpetuating it. Even though it's not physically, they're doing it subliminally, you know? Like blaming those who for their lot in life, blaming those for their lot in life, so that those who are blamed, who are blaming for their life will pick up a gun, or those who are mentally ill in the ranks will pick up a gun and go out and start shooting people who they think or they blame for their lot in life, when they actually had nothing to do with them or don't even know them in the first place to begin with. And I think that's wrong. I think it's just wrong to blame other people for somebody else's actions, you know? That's wrong.
All right, Reggie, thank you. Andrew, do you want to comment on Reggie's remark?
Yeah, I think there is. I mean, people are influenced by different things. It's what we've been talking about is gun violence. It's not, there's not an easy solution. Some people, there's been people you label as right-wing conservatives who've shot up abortion clinics, and there's what happened yesterday. There is something that has come out of yesterday is there seems to be a step back from the hostileness of our politics. I don't know how long that will continue, but I think there is a lot of heated rhetoric out there, and some people might be inspired by it, which is very frightening.
Andrew, on speaking of frightening, let's talk about some of these numbers, okay? And when I say to talk about numbers, by one definition, the GOP baseball shooting is the 154th mass shooting this year. So 165 days, 154 mass shootings. First of all, how do you define, your organization, not you personally, a mass shooting?
Different groups. I think the FBI goes by four people shot. That's what we tend to look at. Other groups and other organizations out there go by how many people were killed. But when you have a mass shooting and more than four or more people are shot in one setting, I think that's what we look at as being a mass shooting.
Okay. Are there other criteria that other organizations or, you know, maybe even some in the press use that you are familiar with or have heard of as of late?
Like I said, it's tricky. I think some go by more than four people killed, but it varies differently. We think labeling some of these as mass shootings is unfortunate because it's still gun violence when a domestic abuser kills his wife in a murder-suicide. It's still that won't get headlines not as a mass shooting, but that is the day-to-day gun violence. Suicides make up two-thirds of America's gun deaths. And they're never labeled a mass shooting, no, of course, but it varies. It's a tricky subject.
Well, I know that the Gun Violence Archive, a nonprofit organization, tracks information on shootings in the United States. And according to them and their definition, that on 165 days through the calendar year, we're looking at with that number averaging out to a little less than one mass shooting per day, which does seem to correlate when you look at the number of people that are killed, and if you add to that even more so injured by guns in a 24-hour period in this country.
Absolutely. It's a harrowing statistic. When you look at...
Go ahead. Sorry, Pat. Andrew.
When you look at the amount of gun deaths, I think people tend to tune it out, but if there was a disease killing Americans at this rate, there would be people demanding answers and solutions from their elected officials.
Let's take some more calls, and we go on line three to John in Los Angeles. John, thank you for calling. Question or comment on this issue?
I think every time you put a law like this into effect, it would disproportionately affect poor people, and namely blacks, just because they come in contact with police a lot more often than middle class or richer people. And once you put a blip on your record, then of course you can never buy a gun. Therefore, you look at people that you can make an argument that truly have anger issues. You take Alec Baldwin, for instance. I mean, you can make an argument that he should never have a gun, but you that would never succeed just due to his wealth and prominence.
Andrew?
Which law, the domestic violence laws?
Any law. That black people come in contact with police much more often than white, and usually young black people. And so once you have a charge against you, therefore that young black person will never be able to own a firearm because of he may have been racially profiled as a young black African male.
Andrew?
What we do know is gun violence is one law is not going to solve our gun violence epidemic. It's a complicated puzzle that we are trying to find ways to reduce gun violence. One such law that we have promoted is the gun violence restraining order law in California that allows a family member who identifies either a loved one who is at danger or talking dangerously about committing a shooting or harming themselves to go to a court and petition the removal of their firearm for a temporary period and allowing a due process to go through and be able to get their gun back after being evaluated. It allows people to get the help that they need before a tragedy occurs, and who knows these people better. We've seen several mass shootings where family members have identified that their loved one was acting strangely and had no tool to remove a firearm. So if I understand the caller correctly, he's saying we just shouldn't have laws that remove guns from dangerous people?
What I'm saying that it's a lot more, you say with the people who can call the police, Well, I live in South Los Angeles, and I would submit to you that just the culture of the people here, they're not going to call the police and ask them to come and take the firearm away from the crazy family member for a short time. That's an upper middle class issue. I mean, it's just such a, to me, it just stinks of a class issue that we want to go take the guns from these poor people, these same people that are profiled and put at a disadvantage at a younger age. And because they were put in advantage and racially profiled, well, now you have a charge against you, therefore you can never buy a gun.
The only criteria we're looking at removing guns is dangerousness.
Exactly. Yeah. And
there are not.
If a young kid gets pulled over as a young guy, he could be deemed as dangerous. You see it every day. I mean, that's why they shoot them, right? They're deemed as dangerous. So if they charge an 18-year-old, he can never buy a gun again. Is that as I understand it, that's what it reads, right?
Laws vary from place to place. Some laws
what
have
what do you want? But do you think that there should be a time when a person who is convicted of a felony of a violent crime should ever have an opportunity to buy a gun again?
I think that is a anecdotal question. There are people who are rehabilitated. There are also people who remain dangerous and threats to society that should
and
not
there,
have
and there,
to a firearm.
And John, thank you for the call. There are some people that were in prison. You know, many of our prisons are crowded with people, you know, who were caught selling or buying or possessing a lot of marijuana, but they're not violent criminals. Obviously, it's hard because, you know, I agree. And sorry, the caller backed you into a corner to a degree, Andrew, but I know that, you know, you can handle it in your position and, you know, on talk radio shows. The bottom line is it's really hard because case by case. And if we just look at the case of the shooter in Alexandria, Virginia, had what you and the coalition proposed and many who are in support of gun control measures, we wouldn't be having this conversation today because there wouldn't have been a shooting, at least by him. And we wouldn't have the injuries and, you know, in San Francisco wouldn't have the fatalities, correct?
That's right. If you can identify dangerous behavior, it would go a long way to stopping some of these tragedies from occurring.
I want to talk now, and if you have more calls, give us a buzz, 888-6-LESLIE, 888-653-7543. Something that was brought to my attention, you know, being part of the media, Andrew, I'm sure you're aware of this. The shooting of the congressional baseball practice was actually the sixth such incident this week alone. 2 days ago, 8 people were shot in 2 incidents in Baltimore. Over the weekend, 9 people were shot during an incident in Chicago. 4 were shot at a lounge in Tennessee. And 4 teenagers were shot at an apartment complex in Houston. Do you think the media has a responsibility to mention all of these? And would that change the public's outlook, or would it perhaps further desensitize them? Because the shooting at the congressional baseball practice, everybody in the country knows about. I would dare say, unless you lived in Baltimore, Chicago, Tennessee, or Houston, you might not know of any of the ones that I had mentioned.
That's right. After the shooting on air in Virginia, there was a lot of talk about the media treating gun violence not as this political football that so often we tend to trap these issues into. But these are laws. A lot of the proposals that have been put forth following mass shootings, universal background checks, assault weapons ban, a limit on magazines, are supported by overwhelming majorities of the country, 87-90%, including Republicans, including gun owners, including NRA members. Where it slows down is when it gets to the elected officials who still have this misplaced fear of the gun lobby and the way that they either raise money or go after people who have even mentioned the most common sense reforms in enacting gun safety measures.
Well, when we use that definition that we talked about, you know, 4 or, you know, more being killed, and some include the shooter, some don't. By the way, if you do include the shooter, mass shootings would be 195. But if the mass shooting is defined as 4 or more victims killed in a public location, And then you exclude robberies and gang violence, that number falls more. But just based on what, you know, we have talked about, there have been over 100 mass shootings this year, no matter almost every way that you define it. Is it true when you look at these numbers, whether it's Gun Violence Archives or other organizations, yours and others, the number of mass shootings has been ticking upward in recent years, right? I mean, we have seen an increase from every year from 2014 to 2015, 2016, and this year is no exception, a ticking increase. Would you say that's because it's easier to get guns? More people perceive that they need guns, or because it's a multifaceted problem. I think we'd agree. You know, you take out the gun, you can, you know, eliminate a lot of this, but not 100%, you know, of this. So why do you think the uptick over these years recently?
There has been a lot of high-profile mass shootings. I'm not totally sure on how the numbers have varied over the last decade or so as far as total gun deaths. The number that's been used previously is around 30,000. And a lot of people say 33,000. Actually, in the last recorded year, 2015, it was 36,000. So I think there's just an increase. It has to do with fear. It has to do with easy access to guns. And it has to do with the amount of guns we have available to us with very limited restrictions. It is incredibly easy. We've seen reports that ISIS touts our weak gun laws as a tool to use in committing atrocities.
What is, you know, I mean, just think about the numbers that we would decrease if the type of weapon or the type of individual trying to access this weapon. I mean, to me, it's just common sense and a no-brainer. If you have an individual that's been violent with people before with their hands, and then you put a loaded weapon into that hand, you don't need a degree from Harvard in rocket science to see that is a formula for danger and perhaps for death.
That's right. When you identify dangerousness and you give them the ability to kill a lot of people in a short period of time, which is what many of these highly lethal assault weapons are, it's what we see. It's what we've seen in Aurora and Newtown and so many other places. And it's a problem that Americans need to wake up to. They need to vote on and support members of Congress and senators and local officials who are trying to make America a safer place.
When you talk about these officials, you talk about the NRA. Ironically, a few of these individuals who were, you know, shot in this particular case in Alexandria were, you know, huge supporters of the NRA. We even had a congressman come out in the past 24 hours and say he's going to, like, you know, open carry now.
Right, and that's going the opposite direction. That is making it easier. That's putting more guns out there. That's making America more dangerous. But that's what the NRA wants. They want to disable America's gun laws, as lax as they are already, and make it easier for people to get a gun and people to use a gun and continue to push them more and more into public places and into our daily lives.
Andrew, thank you for being with us. Andrew Patrick from the Coalition to Stop Gun Violence. Once again, their website is csgv.org. The Coalition to Stop Gun Violence on Twitter, you follow them there at CSGV. And Andrew, you can follow at Andrew_Patrick. And on Facebook, go to facebook.com/Coalition to Stop Gun Violence. If you want to like their page, you should.